I guess I probably came from a slightly, had a slightly different background than many people here. I got into the subject the way many people used to, through the work of Harish Chandra on harmonic analysis on real groups. And I guess what I, what I'd like to talk about is really would fit quite well into the spirit of Harish Chandra's work. However, I may not, that will be really for the end of the talk. What I want to do for the middle of the talk, at least, is to kind of describe these questions and what they might imply for automorphic representations. So, what I want to do is, well, in general, I would take, G will be a connected reductive algebraic group over a local field F of characteristic zero. The first part of the talk I hope to be rather elementary, so I'll just remind you that the usual example, first example is G equals GLN, and I guess in the spirit of much of what I'm going to be saying, of particular interest is the case where F is the real. Okay, I want to also take a smooth function, compact support on GF. And then I recall the two pillars of Harish Chandra's work in harmonic analysis are really dual objects. They are invariant. On the one hand, they're the invariant orbital integrals obtained by, so let's denote them by J gamma of F. And I'm taking gamma here, at least initially, to be a strongly regular point in GF. And then there's a normalizing function. It's most convenient to put a normalizing function in front, a function of gamma, the so-called Weyl discriminant. And then it's just the integral. Basically, it's the integral on G, the integral of F, over the conjugacy class of gamma in G. So here, this is the centralizer in G of gamma. And so it's the integral of F of X to the minus 1, gamma of X, dx, gamma being a strongly regular point in GF. And of course, dx here is the invariant, canonical up to a scalar multiple. It's the invariant measure on the quotient of G modulo G gamma. So these were fundamental objects that Harish Chandra studied. They are the most difficult, or the deepest, when G gamma is compact. If G gamma, so G gamma is a torus in G, a maximal torus. In the case that that's a compact torus, these are the most difficult to get at. Questions of convergence, what happens when gamma approaches a singular point, things of that nature are the most difficult and the deepest, and occupied a great deal of Harish Chandra's efforts. In the case that there is a non-compact component to G gamma, there's a theory, a quite elementary theory, of descent that reduces it to the case of a smaller subgroup of G and the case that a G gamma is compact, at least modulo the center of that smallest subgroup. Okay, so that's one family. The other family are simply tempered characters. And so they are, well, they're just, let's to emphasize the parallel nature of these objects with these ones, let's denote them J of pi of F, but it's just the trace of pi of F. In other words, the trace of the integral over GF of F of X, pi of X, dx. where pi is allowed to be any irreducible. Let me write pi temp for the irreducible representations, tempered representations of GF. I'm not going to recall sort of what tempered means and what strongly regular means, but it doesn't really matter for the purposes of this introduction to know if you're not completely familiar with those notions. The point is simply that, well, once again, this is hardest in parallel with the upper one. These tempered characters are hardest if pi is not properly induced. That is to say, if pi, and I mean that parabolically induced, so this is hardest if pi is not an induced representation from a parabolic subgroup P, which has a unipotent part and a Levy component. And that's really, once again, there's a theory of descent in the case of an induced representation that expresses the character in terms of a character of a smaller group, namely this Levy subgroup of G. So these are the kind of the pillars of Harishchandra's work. They're really dual objects in the sense of finite groups, the sense that irreducible characters are dual to conjugacy classes. And the theory of Harishchandra, while relying to a great degree on analysis, is nevertheless in the same spirit of that duality that one has for finite groups between conjugacy classes and irreducible representations. Well, it turns out that there are another natural pair of objects, which in fact generalize these things, that did not arise in the work of Harishchandra. They arise differently. They arise globally when one tries to truncate the integrals, the divergent integrals that occur in the global trace formula. So I won't describe this process. This would be a different lecture, but it's an operation that makes the integrals in the global trace formula converge. So in the process of making them converge, the resulting convergent integrals, after this rather radical operation that one does, give rise to new objects in really can be regarded as objects in local harmonic analysis, exactly the way these two objects above are, but they depend on one other thing. They depend also on a Levy component of a parabolic subgroup of G, a Levy subgroup M of G. So I just write down what they are. The first family is what you could call a weighted orbital integral. And so it generalizes 1, let's call it 1 plus, and it is an object that depends on M, and it's Jm gamma of F, but otherwise a very similar formula, a normalizing factor that's not really essential, but just convenient. And then the integral, again, over the conjugacy class of gamma of F of X to the minus 1 gamma of X. Here gamma is a strongly regular element, but we ask that gamma lie in M. So it's a strongly G-regular element that lies in M. So far it looks like what we had above, But what makes it different is that there is a very natural function, vm of x here, that awaits this invariant measure. And one can think of it as an integral over the conjugacy class with respect to this measure here, this measure that's absolutely continuous with respect to the invariant measure, but which is not the invariant measure. And so this is for a certain function. Vm of x on it's invariant, fortunately, by g gamma, so it's a function on the domain of integration g gamma. And then parallel to that, very similar kind of formula, what we could call a weighted character. So it'll generalize too, and it is, let's call it Jm pi of f, and it's simply the trace of I. So so here pi is a representation not of g, but of m. So it's a tempered representation of m. But I really want it to fit into what I have up there, so what I do is I take the induced representation, evaluated at f, and then if I were just taking that trace, it would be a special case of what we've got in 2 there, the special case of an induced character, the special case, in fact, that I said was much easier than the case where the representation is not induced. But once again, we put a little ringer into it. We don't take the trace of this operator itself, but we take the trace of this composition of this operator with another natural operator, which all depends on pi and depends on p. So I won't describe this, but I'll just say that p is a parabolic subgroup with Levy component m. Ip pi is the induced representation, so that'll be mapping a natural space, let's say a Hilbert space, on which the induced representation acts. And m pi, m of pi p is a natural operator on this space. So I just emphasize again that if you didn't have this operator here, it would be just what you've got in 2, even a special case of that. And if you didn't have this function here, it would be a special case of what you had in 1. But putting these things in makes these objects more difficult than just the corresponding special cases up there. It puts the case where g gamma is non-compact, which automatically happens if you're choosing a proper Levy subgroup M, but it puts it on an equally difficult footing as the footing of the original orbital integrals where g gamma was compact. So in that sense, these are kind of complementary to the most difficult kinds of orbital integrals, the elliptic orbital integrals, or the non-induced characters. Well, part of what I want to persuade you is that these really are very natural objects, even though they did not arise in local harmonic analysis. To do so, I'm not describing these things in any generality, but let me describe this function vm of x in the case that g is the general linear group, that f is equal to r, and that m is the minimal Levy subgroup, the group of diagonal matrices. So what is it in that case? Well, it's a function of x So we've got a function, we've got x in gf. So this is glmr. So we have an n by n invertible real matrix. And we will simply write it according to Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization. We'll simply write it as a product of an upper triangular matrix and an orthogonal matrix. So I want to say that I want to be able to persuade you that Vm of x is not only natural, but it's a very elementary, in this example, it's a very elementary object that depends only on linear algebra. And so what I would do would be to define a vector h1 of x simply in terms of these diagonal components of the Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization of x. I want it to be in a vector space, rather, in particular, I want to include 0. So I'm going to take the logarithm, basically, of these things, or rather, s1, s2 to the minus 1 absolute value. And the logarithm of sn minus 1, sn to the minus 1. And so this is a vector in Rn. No, it's actually going to be an Rn. I mean, it's, you got a point there, yes. All right, Rn minus 1. Well, for the purpose of this example, in this exercise, I actually don't want to predispose the canonical order that we take on the standard basis of Rn. I want to allow permutations of that basis. So if sigma is a symmetric element in the symmetric group, let me define h a sigma of x exactly the same way. But with the standard basis, that's, of course, what tells us what an upper triangular matrix is, replaced by its permutation, E of sigma 1, E of sigma of n. So then you can talk about upper triangular with respect to this permuted basis. You get another vector in Rn minus 1. And then this gives us n factorial different points. And this function, Vm of x, is simply the volume of the convex hull, the convex polytope of these n factorial different points. The volume in Rn minus 1 of the convex hull of these points, h sigma of x, sigma lying in the symmetric group. So it's an interesting object. It's an interesting convex polytope in n minus 1 dimensions that you can attach to any invertible n by n real matrix. And it's the volume of this thing that goes into this this weighted orbital integral. So, for example, if you wanted to see it geometrically, you could take the case that n equals 3. And so you're talking then about R2. And S3 divides R2. Of course, there's 6 elements in this. It's generated by reflections. It divides R2 into 6 chambers. And then you would have 6 different points. You have a point x there. Let's say there's h1 of x, And then they, this would be, say, H, the permutation 1, 2 of X, and so on. And you're going to get points like this, whose adjacent lines, in fact, intersect these singular hyperplanes perpendicularly. And it's this object that, it's this convex hull that you would be taking the volume of. So a natural kind of convex polytope in two dimensions, but in higher dimensions you get a more complicated but interesting object. But the point is that it's the volume of this thing, it depends on X. And so the volume of the thing depends on the variable point X. Incidentally, if you notice, if you translate this by R2, this is you'd be translating all of these points by R2. Let's say you translate the point X by something in that Levy component. That would simply translate all of these points, and you'd simply translate the whole convex hull. You wouldn't change its volume, and it's for that reason that this really is a function on the quotient of G modulo G gamma. So in general, I'll just say that in general, it's defined. If you're experienced, even if you haven't seen this before, if you're experienced with general groups, you would see right away what the general definition would be then. H m of X is in fact the volume in a certain vector space attached to M, real vector space attached to M, modulo the corresponding subspace attached to G of a finite set of points HP of X, gotten by the general group analog of the Iwasawa decomposition or the orthogonalization decomposition, in which P ranges over the finite set of parabolic subgroups whose Levy component is M. So that's what this thing is. And that operator M sub M up there, again, I won't take the time to define it, but it's a very natural sort of thing, defined in a way that really is kind of dual to this convex polytope. It's defined in terms of the same finite set of objects, the parabolic subgroups with the given Levy component, namely the standard intertwining operators between the induced representations. So I guess these are often written as J P prime P. They're intertwining operators that take the induced representation obtained from pi and the given parabolic subgroup P to the corresponding induced representation induced from P prime. So since I've already used the P to be a fixed parabolic subgroup up there, the variable set is P prime in PM. People who are used to thinking of things more canonically than harmonic analysts, and in particular Harish Chandra, let's say.
Which category is Harish Chandra?
Harmonic analyst. He tends I'm not thinking of him as one of who thinks of things canonically. But let's say algebraic geometers, when they see this, they say, I don't really like this very much. These two kinds of distributions, this one, weighted orbital integrals and weighted characters, they depend on a choice of a maximal compact subgroup. We fixed the orthogonal group up there, but you know, one knows in general groups there's no distinguished choice of maximal compact subgroup, and this construction really depends upon fixing such a thing. Similarly, really it's the same question, these distributions are non-invariant. if f upper y is the conjugate of our original test function by, say, a fixed point in GF, these distributions are not invariant under such an action. In general, J gamma of Fy is not equal to J gamma of F. And similarly, J M pi of Fy is not equal to J M pi of F. Of course, because we were taking, I guess that's pretty obvious, we're not integrating with respect to the invariant measure there, and we're not taking the trace of an induced representation, but rather we're messing it up by composing it with a non-scalar operator. That's what's responsible for this. And that you don't really, in a way, that's kind of complicated. I mean, an invariant distribution is you would expect it to depend only on the invariant orbital integrals of a given function, or equivalently, to depend only on the invariant, on the irreducible characters of the function. But these things, they are going to have to depend on the function itself rather than just its orbital, invariant orbital integrals or invariant characters. And that's not a nice situation. However, there is a resolution to this problem, and also the problem of it not depending depending on a choice of maximal compact subgroup. The resolution comes from the fact that even though these two sets of distributions are not invariant, it's not difficult to show that the failure of them to be invariant, the obstruction to their invariance, or if you like, the difference between these two things, actually is the same. Well, in rank one, one would that could be easily made sense of, and in the higher rank, it's also can be that the failure of these two families of distributions to be invariant, neither is invariant. However, the failure of them to be invariant is actually, or the obstruction, if you like, if you try to figure out how to kind of write down the obstruction in a natural way, is the same. They fail to be invariant for the same reasons. I'm not going to make that precise because the answer is no. But it's really not very difficult. And what it means is that you can add some correction terms, natural correction terms to this, that you build out of these things, and thereby make this thing invariant. So you can add some correction terms. To a J M gamma of F constructed from the dual things, J, and you have to use not just the ones attached to not just the ones attached to M, but the ones attached to all Levy components L that contain M, a finite set, and all representations of L. Okay, but you can construct some correction terms in a pretty natural way. To get a modified, let's call it, we can call it a modified weighted orbital integral. IM gamma of F, which is invariant. Pardon me?
No longer a single integral. One integral plus or minus.
It's in fact not even an integral. It's just this. It's JM gamma of F minus a sum of terms parameterized by this finite set of elements. Distributions on G constructed, in fact, from these weighted orbital integrals, from the weighted characters, However, you end up with a family of distributions which are invariant, and in fact, which also are independent of the choice of maximal compact subgroup. So I hope, you know, I hope that people, algebraic geometers, would be happy with that. But in any case, they're much more they're canonical kinds of objects, even though you can't really construct them directly in a canonical way. And the upshot of it is that the distributions, this family of distributions, IM gamma of F, where M and gamma vary, these are the main terms in the trace formula, or really on the geometric side. I'll say the invariant trace formula, because the trace formula that you get at first go round has the weighted orbital integrals on the geometric side, and you perform this resolution process on the whole trace formula, and you end up with these things as the terms on the geometric side. So it's interesting, it's interesting to remark that this notion of truncation and this problem of invariance, they have geometric analogs. So of truncation and invariance, and they're in fact central parts to the work of Laforgue. Yes. So in the case of GLN, these objects are critical to his what he succeeded in doing for GLN. No expert to describe this, but what he does is he takes GLN over a function field. He associates to it an algebraic geometric object, some sort of stack, or maybe it's not really a scheme, but of Stücke. But whatever, be that as it may, it's not a finite type. You would like to have a scheme that whose cohomology groups maybe are a finite dimension, and you can maybe calculate the trace of the Hecke operators on them. Unfortunately, the thing one attaches to GLN is not a finite type. Its cohomology groups would be infinite dimensional. That's the problem of truncation. That's why you need truncation. It's the same thing as the integrals diverging in the trace formula. Laforgue truncates them in a way that's quite similar to this. I haven't described the truncation, but what Laforgue does geometrically is quite similar to it. And then you get some things, which I think, as I recall or understand it, you get some a variety that is a finite type, but the Hecke operators do not act on it. And that's kind of like the analog of non-invariance, and he has to go through all kinds of geometric constructions to rectify that non-invariance. But it's interesting to note that it's quite parallel, which I guess is not surprising, because in the end he has to compare some sort of Lefschetz formula in the geometric situation for this GLN over a function field with the invariant. With some sort of trace formula. He actually uses the non-invariant trace formula, but he doesn't compare it directly with it. But in any case, you have to compare the trace formula with a Lefschetz formula to get the reciprocity or the Langmuir's conjecture for function fields over GLN. Well, people have wondered about that. It seems this kind of whatever you call it, want to call it renormalization or truncation, seems to be occur, if not always the same thing, but occur in different parts of mathematics. Okay, so now the main problem, and I want to think of it kind of as a problem in local harmonic analysis, is the following. So now you have a family, these terms here, you have a family of invariant distributions attached to any local group. And there are, if you want to compare trace formulas between different groups, they suggest quite specific identities that these corresponding terms are going to have to satisfy. If you want to somehow cancel the geometric sides and get reciprocity laws between the corresponding spectra attached to different groups. So what the main problem is to prove identities, and again, I won't write them out. They're quite precise, but I won't write them out. I'll describe a special case of it in a moment, but one wants to prove identities between the distributions, these invariant distributions, Im gamma of S, and their analogs. Now, it's actually not quite the same distributions, but distributions obtained from them, so-called stable distributions, but really analogs of these things, for other groups, a certain specific family of other groups, a G prime, which are attached in a precise fashion to G. And so this, the group G comes, this is a theory of Langlands and Schelstad. It comes with a natural but rather elaborate construction of a whole family of other groups, so-called endoscopic groups. These are the endoscopic groups don't exist in a vacuum. They are attached to a given group G. So the family of endoscopic groups would be attached to a given group G. So let me give the simplest example of what such an identity would be. The simplest example would be the case where G is GLN, but not over the field, rather the general linear group of a quaternion algebra Q. Over F, and G prime is the larger group of GL2N. Well, then the theory of quaternion algebras, think of this, you can take F to be R, it's most elementary in that case, gives you a canonical injection gamma, let's say gamma to gamma prime, of conjugacy classes. So there's a canonical injection from the conjugacy classes in the rational points of this group, the F rational points of this group, to the F rational points of this group. And you use this injection to define a transfer of functions. So to define a transfer F to F prime of functions, it's not a unique mapping of functions, but rather it's a unique mapping of functions determined up to their invariant orbital integrals. Namely, you ask that the invariant orbital integrals of f prime at a given gamma prime be the invariant integrals, orbital integrals of the original function at gamma in terms of invariant orbital integrals. And then the identity you want, and this really the simplest of cases, is, you can guess what it would be, the required identity you would ask that I am gamma of f, for any gamma and any f, be the same as the corresponding invariant distribution at the corresponding Levy subgroup of G prime and the corresponding conjugacy class gamma. These weighted orbital integrals, incidentally, depend only on the conjugacy class of gamma and the equivalence class of pi in the case of weighted characters. So you would ask that this be equal to this. And that's the identity you would want. And that's something that's not going to be obvious. The reason for it is that you define f prime in terms of f by its weighted, by its invariant orbital integral. Namely, its average, its invariant average over each conjugacy class in G prime. This thing is an invariant distribution, and so it does depend only on the invariant orbital integrals of f, but in a way that is not at all transparent. Because we made it invariant by taking a non-invariant distribution about which we knew nothing and subtracting from it another non-invariant distribution, again, about which we knew nothing. So we don't know anything. There's no reasonable way to get any explicit, your hands explicitly on the invariant orbital integrals on how you would evaluate this thing in terms of the invariant orbital integrals of f, even though you know theoretically that it depends only on such the invariant orbital integrals. So that's the identity that one wants. Okay, let me give two more examples. And these, I'm indebted to Jim Cogdell's clear talk. I will try to use his notation for these two other examples. G is Gn. So as I understand from Jim's notation, a Gn stands for a split classical group, symplectic or orthogonal, whose dual group embeds into GLn. So that's what I am meaning by this. And so that's my example. This would be an orthogonal or a symplectic group. Split, let's say, then the corresponding family of endoscopic groups are products of classical groups of the same type. So this is notation of Cogdell's talk. It's just a little bit. So I understand it's to be understood that if Gn, that there is a dual group of Gn, the one that embeds into GLn, if it's of symplectic type, then the same would have to be true of these two things. And if it's of orthogonal type, the same would have to be true of these two things. That's what I mean by that notation. One other proviso, if the dual group or the group itself is an even orthogonal group, I would insist that K also be even. So the endoscopic groups for even orthogonal groups are products of two even orthogonal groups whose rank adds up to the original, to the given rank. And finally, I would also want to include within these things, Jim, I think, was talking about split groups, but there are some quasi-split even orthogonal groups, and one would want, when any one of these things is a an even orthogonal group, you would want to include all possible quasi-split forms of it. But those, the construction, the general construction of endoscopic groups yields these objects as the endoscopic groups of a split classical group. And the third example, which is related and which really doesn't fit into the picture that I have a little bit of a generalization of what I was doing up there, namely it's so-called twisted orbital integrals, for which G is not a connected reductive group, but rather a connected component of a non-connected reductive group. So what I would take G to be the non-connected component obtained by the semi-direct product of GLN with a group of order 2, where this is the canonical outer automorphism of this, the transpose inverse. That's the outer automorphism of GLN. The endoscopic groups, however, so this is a connected component of a non-connected group. However, the construction of endoscopic groups applies to this situation as well, and it leads to connected groups, again, connected quasi-split groups. And in this case, they are products, again, of two classical, quasi-split classical groups, except you can take any of them with the proviso that if the dual group of GK is of orthogonal type, then the dual group of GN minus K has to be of symplectic type. That's what I mean by check. I mean the group whose dual group is of the other type. And these, in this slightly more general situation, these are known as twisted endoscopic groups. So the identities for 2 and 3, in fact, are best considered together. And the identities, the general identities that I'm referring to up there, when applied to these ones, are more complicated than just this one, because, there's, for example, there's several endoscopic groups. But in just stating things really much too simplified form, but main problem or the identities, these referred to in that problem for 2 and 3 taken together, this is in grossly schematic and simplified form, but what they yield is a matching, or what they, I should say, what they would yield is a matching of geometric sides of trace formulas. On the one hand, the trace formula for G, and on the other hand, a linear combination of geometric sides of trace formulas, or rather stable trace formulas, for the endoscopic groups G prime attached to G. So if you can match the geometric sides, you could cancel them out, and then you're going to get a corresponding identity or reciprocity between spectral sides. And so this would lead to a matching of the discrete. I mean, this again, there's quite a bit to be done to get from here to here, and from here to here, there's things to be done as well, things which are done, but in any case, it's not sort of immediate. A matching of discrete spectra discrete automorphic spectra. And finally, that's just because you have an abstract identity between sort of the full discrete spectrum of one classical group and a linear combination of discrete spectra evaluated at transfers of test functions. Just because you have such a thing doesn't mean you're going to get directly something, but with interpretation, they would lead to applications, to representations of classical groups. So let me describe the sort of things that one would want. Jim described a very complete classification, both local and global, of generic representations of classical groups, representations of classical groups that have a Whitaker model, and it is what he talked about should really be regarded as a classification of these things in terms of self-dual generic representations of GLN. And so for the purpose of this exercise, we regard the representations of GLN as being known, as being objects that are so well, and well, the goal is to classify representations of classical groups in terms of those of GLN. So what one would want to do would be to remove the restriction of generic that Jim was talking about. And so what that would mean would be you would want to classify all of the representations of a given classical group, both local and global, in terms of representations of GLN as explicitly as possible. And in fact, you'd like to be able to arrange them in a systematic way in terms of packets, L packets. So it's a description of what form the classification would take, and there's a precise conjectural form that should take in which they all fit into natural packets, which I won't describe, but quite precise. It's conjectured that every tempered packet should have one representation, or perhaps more than one, but a representation which is generic. So, but that seems quite difficult to prove. Looks like you probably would need the trace formula to prove that, but that would show that the representations classified, the generic representations that are classified, that they each represent a tempered packet, both local and global. You'd also want to be able to calculate the multiplicities. With which a given, if you've got a classification, you'd like to be able to calculate the multiplicity with which it occurs in the discrete spectrum. You would also like to be able to describe the generic representations, Ramanujan's the generalization of Ramanujan's conjecture would say that the generic representations of a classical group are tempered, that they satisfy the natural generalization of the bounds that Ramanujan attached to a certain modular form of weight 12. That's far from proved, but in any case, generic representation should represent tempered packets that satisfy Ramanujan's conjecture. But for classical groups, there are a lot of other representations that do not satisfy Ramanujan's conjecture, and you'd like to classify these. The non-tempered, so the counter, I shouldn't call them counterexamples to Ramanujan's conjecture since he never made that conjecture, but for general groups, but classify a non-tempered automorphic representation. And I guess finally, what one would want to do is the classification of representations in terms of L packets would be in terms of characters, their characters, or implicitly in terms of orbital integrals, invariant orbital integrals. And one needs to classify representations in that way, that is to say, in terms of characters or orbital integrals, if one is to apply these things to Shimura varieties, because Shimura varieties would give L-adic representations of Galois groups on cohomology, and you'd want to show that these are related to automorphic representations. But the only apparent way to compare the two things is by taking traces, and for that you need a classification of the automorphic representations in terms of characters. Now, I am not really going to be able to describe how the solution to that main problem goes in the Archimedean case, which is what I was thinking of as something that would be quite in the spirit of Harish Chandra's work. But there's actually a supplementary problem that you would really need to do these things. And that is, you really would want to define these distributions, JM rho of F and IM rho of F. If rho is, I'm using a different letter here, rho is a singular conjugacy class. In MF, or actually, in the case of Archimedean fields, more generally, an invariant singular distribution, say, supported on a semi-simple conjugacy class. More generally, a singular invariant distribution. On MF. That would be the same thing if F is p-adic. Singular invariant distributions are the same as orbital integrals, but for real groups you can talk about normal derivatives, and there are many more of them. And you really need, for questions of transfer, you have to actually go outside the category of conjugacy classes in the case of real groups. So, you would also want to extend whatever solution you have for the main problem. From the regular weighted orbital integrals to this more general family. Now, the reason being that in the trace formula, you don't just have regular orbital integrals, you have singular orbital integrals. You have f of 1, the value of f that f takes at the identity. But you also have weighted orbital integrals attached to such things where the identity is regarded as an element in a Levy subgroup. So let me say that the supplementary problem and the main problem have been solved, but not completely written up. In the case that F is p-adic, the solution is conditional on the fundamental lemma. I won't say what that is. And it's a global argument. It basically is even though you're dealing with local objects, the solution, proof of these identities, is by looking at the global trace formula and the comparison of such things. If F is R, it's unconditional. So I should say that the fundamental lemma is a conjectured identity or a family of conjectured identities about certain very specific p-adic invariant orbital integrals. It's really required to be able to compare global trace formulas, and it's also required to even show that this kind of transfer, F to F prime up here, that we talked about here, it's known in this case, but it's really required to be able to say that the transfer that you would try to make in terms of invariant orbital integrals, that it actually takes a smooth function of compact support here, and that the image is actually a smooth function, the set of invariant orbital integrals of a smooth function of compact support on the group G prime. And Waltz-Breguet has shown that the fundamental lemma, that by the way, that's known as the Langlands-Schellstad conjecture, that this is that this transfer of functions is a well-defined correspondence between smooth functions of compact support. Waltz-Breguet has shown that the fundamental lemma implies the Langlands-Schellstad conjecture. But you'd need the fundamental lemma in a second way to carry out this global argument. So that would be even needed for the definition of F prime, but then you'd need it in a second way to carry out the global argument using the trace formula. In the case of the reals, it's unconditional. The Langlands-Schellstad transfer conjecture is known. It was given by Diana Schellstad's original results for real groups, and one can establish these identities by a local argument. And it's that argument that I wanted to, had I had time, I would have described in terms of Harish Chandra's work, but let me just say that in the case that F equals R, these weighted orbital integrals satisfy a natural family of differential equations, more complicated than the differential equations satisfied by invariant orbital integrals. Non-constant coefficients, and one hasn't been written up, but establish the identities for real groups by using these differential equations, comparing boundary values that the corresponding distributions I, M, gamma satisfy around singular hyperspaces, and finally, one can describe an asymptotic Fourier transform of these things as gamma goes to infinity in terms of characters of F. And those three ingredients, kind of really in the spirit of solving second-order differential equations, but those three ingredients can actually be used to, yes. What? So those things can give the identities. So thank you.